My name's Stephen Neal, pastor at Alden Bethel Church and blogger at Building Jerusalem.
And my name's Stephen Watkinson, church planter in Rochdale and blogger at Northern Souls.
So, Steve, one of the questions that people would often have about a church is what children's work and what youth work you have. And people, especially people with children, would feel that that was a real priority and something that we ought to have. I've got to say, in the places I've been for a while now, we've had very limited, to say the least, children's and youth work. How do you feel about that kind of being a big part of how people would assess a church?
Yeah, not great, if I'm being honest. I don't think there's anything wrong with having youth work. I don't think there's anything wrong with having stuff on for children. I think that can be a helpful thing, depending on how it's directed and how it's set up. But generally, I think the history of Sunday schools and the history of youth work, which has been a big thing over the last 100 years or so in the church, the fruit of it has not been good. I don't think the fruit of it has been to see lots and lots of people saved. I think most churches would recognise at best there is an attrition rate where you see, you know, out of 100 children over the course of decades, you might see a handful of them saved and going on with the Lord, and actually very often even less still. And I think you're far more likely, even in churches where they do have youth work and that sort of thing going on as a major plank of what they do, the kids generally who press on with the Lord aren't pressing on with the Lord primarily because of the youth work they had. They're normally pressing on with the Lord because of the parents that they had. And I just think our tactics, for want of a better word, to pour into the children has been a mistake, when actually I think what we should be doing is pouring into the adults and equipping them to reach their own children. Because I think you're far more likely to get effective children discipled by their parents than you are getting godly believers discipled in a youth group once a week in the Sunday school sort of half an hour in the middle of a service.
I mean, it's probably true, isn't it? Thinking through some of the churches that I've been a part of, both as a child. I mean, it's funny, I was talking with some friends from a church we went to as a child, and I mean, as it happens, we're still going with the Lord, but we remember sort of three or four rows of children in the Sunday school, and I don't think there's any children, for example, in that church anymore, and it's a seriously declining church. But so you had, I guess, 100 kids in that Sunday school of my generation who will now be in their 40s. But those people are neither in church nor are their children in church. And I can pattern that across a number of places that I've been, where a place where I was in ministry before, they talked about a past in the 80s where they had hundreds of children coming to this youth thing. And I think it had, in one sense, it had a big impact. So there was a generation that knew that church. It's a generation who could recite John 3:16 because that was the kind of verse of the organisation. But again, it was a declined church. Almost none of those people were there anymore. And I think that is a repeater pattern, isn't it?
It's a very, very common theme, isn't it? You get churches that camp out on what they would consider the glory days of their church. Mm-hmm. When we remember when there were hundreds of kids coming along to the Sunday school, and you think, yeah, but the big question isn't how did you get them in? The big question is how many of them actually stayed? And very often the answer to that is none, or a handful.
Is it one of the things that struck me a bit about some of the discussion about this is people have sort of started to say, oh, we did it wrong. So it was all games and fun and there wasn't enough Bible. If only we fix it by doing more Bible, then that's what we got wrong. That's why people didn't stay. We never, you know, we sort of did lots of gospel, but it was a bit light. Now, I'm sure that was true. Actually, the stuff that I went through as a kid, I don't think you would have said that. I think we were taught the Bible a lot. I mean, you know, Sunday school, everywhere I went was look at the Bible passage. I mean, you might not have been brilliantly taught always, but actually it was fine, a lot of it.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think there's a range of youth groups, aren't there? I mean, I do know youth groups where they didn't really do that.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a Friday youth group that was basically just fun. That was a church one, but we had a Bible study as well, which we went to, and we were expected to be there on Sunday, and we were.
Yeah, I mean, that's broadly my experience too. We had a midweek thing that was games and stuff like that, and then we had Bible studies the rest of the time. So it's, I don't think that's necessarily the case anyway. And I don't think it's new. I mean, I think in my blog post I wrote recently, there was a load of quotes I gave from Roy Joslin's book, Urban Harvest. I mean, he wrote that in 1982. So this is 40 years ago now. This was written before I was born, you know. And yet he says that this is a historic problem. It's not new. And this is historic from 40 years ago.
Mm.
And he says, the chief lesson of Sunday school and working class history is abundantly clear. Apparently success in the Sunday school work of one decade is no guarantee of a thriving local church in the next. As a general rule, I believe that evangelism among adults ought to have the priority. And in the book, he's basically outlining the importance of reaching the adults. Now, I've been raised in a background where Sunday schools were a big deal, where doing youth work and reaching the children and even, you know, reaching the parents through the children was seen as a good thing, you know, seen as a right thing and a good strategy. Roy Joslin, and I agree with him, said back in the 80s that just does not work and is not a credible approach. And my experience over 30 or so years of being involved in that sort of mission work, that sort of children's oriented and family-oriented mission work, is that it doesn't really work. And whilst I can find exceptions to that, I can point you to people who've become believers through that, and I know lots of people who would do that, the reality is they are more exceptions than the rule. And I think if you look at a lot of the people who've become believers through church youth groups and through church Sunday schools, most of the time their faith owes far more to their parents who are encouraging them to go to those youth works than it does to the actual youth works themselves. It's not to say the Lord didn't use those works at all and that those works weren't valuable for them in their discipleship or in other things. But ultimately, I think it was the faith of the parents and the work of the parents at home who were then encouraging their children to go to those things. It was far more important and told far more than the actual Sunday school itself. And I think that is the change I think we have to make. I think it's a tactical mistake to focus on the kids. And I think it's a mistake to say we must have youth work, we must have Sunday school. I think what we must have is well-equipped, well-taught, well-built-up parents who will then build up the children. Because that's the biblical pattern. I mean, the Bible doesn't mention youth work. It doesn't mention Sunday schools. And I'm not saying they are wrong or they are errant or anything like that. They can be helpful. But what I am saying is the Bible's very, very clear that the primary place for discipleship, the primary people with the of first importance as far as children and their faith are concerned, is the family unit. God has special responsibility for fathers and parents in general for raising and teaching their children. If you read Deuteronomy, it talks about when you get up and when you go to bed, when you go out of the city and you come back from the city. These are all family settings and family situations. And I think the way to disciple children is to disciple the parents. If you have a strong discipleship program for parents and teach them how to raise godly children, you are far more likely to see godly children raised up than if you basically pour all your time and resource and energy into a youth group they go to for an hour a week.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? I remember people talking about, so when the Church of England was in, well, still kind of is in free fall, sort of in terms of numbers going, there's this story told where the bishops had this present, I don't know if this is true, had it presented to them, and there was quiet for a bit. And then they all started telling kind of good news stories. So it was the kind of, oh, well, but there's this church in my diocese, da, 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 and, you know, here's a good, here's some people who've grown a church and that sort of thing. I'm inclined to, I remember ever since I've heard that, I've been inclined to think that we kind of laugh at that and then we all do it. So with something like this, our instinct is to go, and maybe it's to justify ourselves, but we kind of do what you said, you know, we can all think of people, well, so-and-so is in the church because of that youth group. And I know so-and-so was converted in the youth group and that sort of, and Sunday school, you know, being brought up in the Sunday school, et cetera, et cetera. Instead of being willing to just pull back a bit and go, but let's be honest, it's small potatoes given the number of people we thought we were reaching, sort of thing.
I mean, it's the default response to anything. Anytime you ever say, look, I don't know whether this is the best way to do something, the answer is always
a good news
story. But I've seen the Lord use it. But then I think, but I've seen the Lord speak through a donkey, and I'm not getting everybody down to the local donkey sanctuary. Do you know what I mean?
I haven't seen that, but...
Well, I've read of it.
Yeah.
and I think, you know, you don't just take a one-off thing and say, or the outliers, and go, therefore, that's going to be where we pump all our resources.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And I suppose that's what... It's difficult, isn't it? Because I think... And we've talked before about we often pattern what we do on what other churches have done in our experience or what that we see. And it has been. I mean, a lot of people are heartbroken at the state of Sunday schools in churches now because they... I mean, like I say, my generation of... You know, a lot of those Sunday schools... Parents were still sending their kids to the Sunday school, even though they weren't coming to church, kind of thing. It was, I'm still just in that generation. And similarly with that youth work I was talking about, I mean, the story goes that lots of people, lots of the parents, in effect, were in the pub. The kids were sent off to, you know, and they got a couple of hours free or the evening free in the pub kind of thing, with where the kids were at the church youth group. It's just having that sort of realism that goes, it did feel like good things were happening. Actually, not much was happening. And that's quite hard for people to admit, isn't it? I think. Especially if you poured a lot into it.
I think it's fair to say the Lord may have used it in all sorts of ways. So,
oh yeah, absolutely.
It may well have done a lot of good for the people leading it. You know, it may have helped them grow. It may have helped them in... serving in other areas. It may have helped in all sorts of ways for their own personal spiritual growth and things like that. So I wouldn't want to go as far as to say it's wasted, and equally,
yeah,
I wouldn't want to go as far as to say, and clearly there were people saved through that work. Well, that's a good thing as well. So it's not that nothing happened, but what I would say is, as a general rule of thumb, it's fair to say, I mean, I know churches that have basically made outreach to children their main outlet, and over 40 or 50 years they've had big Sunday school, big youth work, that type of thing, and then you just analyze the gospel fruit from it. So they would always argue, we've seen hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of children, but possibly even thousands of children, come through our Sunday schools and our youth works and our things. And you go, well, that's lovely, how many of them are going on with the Lord now? And they'll give you some names, they'll give you some people, but you think, over 50 years, you're giving me a handful of names. That strikes me as a very, very poor return. Whereas, actually, when you even analyse some again, you say, and how many of them are children of believers who are being taught in the church in other ways? And actually, the reason they went to the Sunday school isn't because the Sunday school was going to build them up. It's because their parents were building them up at home, and they said, that's another good outlet and a good thing for you to go to, which is a totally different setup. Whereas in our communities, where we're largely reaching unchurched people, culturally non-Christian people, you know, if we just set up a youth work in our area and said, let's see who comes, let's see who's going to be saved through that, I think that's going to be small potatoes in terms of take-up, and even smaller beans in terms of who's going to actually convert.
Well, one thing, of course, is that the reason that a lot of places now, a lot of churches now feel so small, is because as the culture's shifted, that it doesn't happen anymore. So the Sunday school has died, probably. because no one is sending their kids anymore, and there are only a few people who've got kids in the church, sort of thing.
Well, I think culturally there's been a shift anyway. So I think, and I've seen it partly through the organisations I've been involved with. So there was a sort of 1950s model of outreach, wasn't there, where generally speaking, people were going to church mm-hmm. and they would take their kids and therefore sending them to your youth work and your Sunday
with
school
natural, then.
And you doing an outreach to kids outside the church. That's all okay because we all go to church anyway. Then kind of 70s, 80s and 90s a bit, there was an element of, we don't go to church, but we still sort of see the church as a good thing, get some good morals, be taught nicely. So we don't mind sending the kids, but you know, we're not that bothered. Since then, there's been a cultural shift again, where not only do people not go to church and have no involvement with it, but actually they don't even think we're teaching good morals. They very often think what we're teaching is actively bad and unhelpful. And so they're suspicious. And there's an increasing call on people's time anyway. I mean, the average middle class parent in particular is just so busy running around taking their kids to every club under the sun. The idea of trying to fit another one in is, you know, difficult enough, and the idea that you try and fit another one in with an organization you don't have any involvement with and you don't have any empathy or sympathy with, you think, why would I choose that? I mean, most of us wouldn't send our kids down to the local madrasa because you just think that's a bit odd, and so why would anyone do that to the church now? So I think there's been another cultural shift again, and we are viewed now not as a good thing per se, but actually with a bit of suspicion amongst some, which is why I think it's quite important for churches these days to be seen to be a good in their community, because you can't assume that anymore just because you're a church. So I think, you know, we in our community do a lot of what might be called social or good work stuff. I mean, we obviously want to use those as means of sharing the gospel with people, but and it's part of our witness locally, because actually we are viewed with suspicion, and so we have to show people that we are a good thing being there, and there is something that the gospel does to us that makes us do these things. And if we're not doing them, you know, people will say, well, what sort of good are you? You know, so you've almost got to build some goodwill with people before they will even engage with you now.
It's interesting as well, just thinking, even if I've heard quite a lot of good news stories that are about sort of, I became a Christian because my friend at school invited me to X, Y, and Z. And that's quite interesting, isn't it? Because again, I actually think that fits the pattern of, so where it is effective is where you've got well-discipled parents with well-discipled kids. Or, okay, maybe you haven't got the parents, but you have, for some reason, got the kid and you've discipled them, and they're doing evangelism.
And so, discipling the and person yeah, along the way, yeah.
And so it's quite... I think loads of... You could probably blame Anglicans for this. I mean, you blame Anglicans for everything, don't you? But... this sort of faith by osmosis thing is kind of what we've done for a long time, where we kind of just hoped if we got them in the building and told them the gospel, it would work out. And of course, with some people it does, because God's amazing like that. But actually, we weren't really in a context of... One of the things we discovered, actually, we had quite a big all-age outreach thing going at previous church. I don't think it had any fruit, really. I mean, maybe in God's goodness in time and all those sorts of things, qualifications. And really the reason was that we just didn't have the time with people to actually do more than here's a gospel drop on you. And what I really need to do is go, look, are you actually interested? Would you actually like to spend some time? Do you know what I mean? You needed to do the kind of, is it harsh to say actual evangelism? where you were able to give time to individuals? Because like you say, they're so far away.
Well, it's different again. I come back to the importance of parents who have spiritual responsibility
yeah,
for
and,
kids.
I was talking about, that was parents I was thinking
yeah,
about.
Yeah, because what I think is, if I have a mate, at school or at university or at work or wherever, I can encourage them, I can persuade them, but there's only so much you can do. With my children, however, I tell them you're coming to church. I tell them you're going to read the Bible now. I tell them we're going to do certain things together. And, you know, praise God, most of the time they are happy and want to do that. But I have the authority as a parent to say, look, I'm your parent. I know what is important. I know what is significant for you. And I can effectively command you to do what needs to be done. It doesn't mean they'll become a believer if I do that, but it does mean I have an authority and a power available to me to make them go to things and do things that I simply don't have with my neighbor and my friend and other people's children and, you know, any other group of people. And that's why, in part, I think the Lord is so clear on the importance of parents teaching their children, because parents can say to their children, we are going to church today, and that's not me offering you, would you like to go? I'm telling you, we are going, and we are going to read the Bible together now, and that's not me asking you, would you like to? That's me telling you, that's what we're going to do. And again, you say that sort of thing, and there will inevitably be people who say, oh, I know people who are put off the gospel because their parents did that. Well, maybe, and there's a nice way of doing it, and there's a not nice way of doing it, and all of that. But ultimately...
Well, and... there are kids who believe and kids who don't believe.
Right. And I'm not saying...
that's not my control.
I'm not saying there's an ABC that if you do it, your kids will become believers. But I do think you can look at general patterns. And I do think it's fair to say parents who effectively made their kids go to church, parents who made their kids read the Bible, parents who made their kids pray, parents who made their kids do things that maybe even some of the time they didn't want to do, minimally, they were showing their kids these things are really important. Minimally, they were modeling those things to their children. And the Bible's pretty clear about modeling those things when they're young, so that when they're old, they won't depart from them. And I don't think that means, therefore, do it and they become believers. But I do think if you set those habits early, the idea that they're more likely to stick later is credible. And equally, if they're reading the Bible and praying, and that's a habit that sticks... well, if the Lord works through his word by his spirit, then the chances of them actually becoming believers because they're then doing that because of that habit makes it far more likely too.
And do you, it's an interesting one, isn't it? So I probably grew up in quite an old-fashioned family in lots of ways, but we did pray together and we were expected to read our Bible and we had our Bible notes and all that kind of thing. And... it wasn't, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but we weren't sort of outsourced to the kids' work. We did go to it. And, but I do wonder, especially when you're talking about that sort of 50, 60, 70 setup, where even church-going families, and again, you know, were they Christian families, but maybe even Christian families... I think the idea that the parent took the responsibility for the child, I think possibly because there was too much assumption anyway about, oh, we're all Christians here and all that kind of thing. And I think you see the fruit of that often in generations now where parents struggle with the fact that they want to think their kids are Christians, even though they're obviously not and all that sort of thing. But there was a sort of presumption. And anyway, the Sunday school did that for you, or the youth group did it for you. Whereas actually, I mean, I think there's been a healthy shift in what I've seen of youth training and stuff. Obviously, it's not really something I've done, but where there's this move going, no, actually, we're here to support the parental stuff much more than we're here to do it for you.
Yeah, and I think as a minimum, so one shift we made, and I think it's been a really positive one, was to hold church curriculum. So typically, I think in a Sunday school, you send your kids out and they just do some notes that whatever the program is they do. And it probably has very little to do with what you're doing in the other room. What we've moved to doing is, the children only go out for the duration of the sermon and the reading. And when they go out, they have at least a portion of that reading
in their thing.
And then they look at the same passage. They might have slightly different applications to them, but basically they look at the same passage. And because I write my notes ahead of time, the Sunday school teachers are writing their lessons based on my notes, so that the children are part of the whole service except for that part where they have a lesson that's more geared towards them, but it's the same passage, so that you can go home and you can talk about it. That's one way that we try and support parents through the children's work, rather than saying we'll just teach them something different and then, you know, let's just hope that was worth doing later. So that's one example. The other way is obviously we want to build up the parents themselves to have theological conversations with their children.
I wonder how it's really hard, and you only experience your own family on the whole. So I wonder how much of that sort of stuff was going on when I was a child. So, I mean, I did talk to my mum and dad about stuff, and in God's grace, that was good. And I'm very aware of that. You know, it's a funny one, isn't it? One of the things that I realise again is that as a church leader, you've had a certain amount of hopefully depth of theology and all that kind of thing, so that when my kids throw stuff at me, I'm hopefully not completely, you know, or when they've done done something in a youth group or whatever, and we talk about it, I can engage. You know, I'm not, unless it's pretty unusual, I can probably manage. But you do realise it's not like, that's not going to be straightforward for a lot of people. And if you don't do that, so it's different ball game, isn't it? If you've sat and listened to the sermon and your kids come out asking, oh, we did this in Sunday school. And it's just easy. It's a really positive thing, isn't it, to have those conversations with parents and children. And I suppose that's part of your equipping with the, you know, you are equipping them, aren't you, in the sermon to raise their children, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, in the sermon, we're saying, your kids are doing this. This is what we're learning. Now you can go and talk to your children about what they've learnt and say, oh, yes, we learnt that. And also some of these other bits. Why don't you talk about that? And, you know, we're equipping in various other ways. So we do our theology breakfast and stuff like that, which is just another part of equipping believers. But I think when I was a child, the Sunday school stuff didn't bear any relation to what was going on in the church service. Mm. So it's not to say it was bad. It was just, it just wasn't related. But you see, what the biggest impact on me was without doubt my parents. You know, I remember them reading the Bible with me. Then I did notes and things like that. I mean, I remember going through a period in my teens of not wanting to go to church particularly and saying, I don't want to go. And the answer was always tough. You're going. But that was important because that's exactly what they said about school. If I went, I don't want to go to school. And I'm pretty well every parent under the sun goes, the answer to that is tough, you're going. And yet with church, for some reason, we go, I don't want to go to church. Oh, okay. Well, you're old enough to make your own decision now. Like, well,
no, not for school, you know.
But basically, what we're conveying there is school's more important than church. What we're conveying through that is that actually church isn't that important, and certainly not important enough for me to have a fight with you about. Yeah. Whereas my parents made me go, and basically, if I said I'm not going, you know, obviously I'm at an age, it's not like they're gonna, you know, smack me or something. But I mean, they would, every sanction under the sun would have come out. And, you know, and so I had to decide, well, is it really worth it?
Do I want every sanction under the sun?
Yeah. And so, and then I got dragged out doing, you know, my family were quite big on evangelism and evangelism was very important. And so I was dragged out to evangelistic things because this is an important thing that we can do. Mm. And I wasn't always made to go to those, but it was encouraged and it was seen as an important thing. And all of that is part of equipping your children because, you know, frankly, most of us don't see what your pastor does throughout the week. Most of us see him for an hour, maybe 2 hours. You don't see your youth leaders more than a couple of hours a week. Whereas you see your parents day in, day out, for hours at a time, and you see what they think is important. You see what matters to them. And I think so very few of us realise the impact that we have on our children just in the things that we make out to be important. Mm. And I wonder whether the vast majority of children in our churches would think mum and dad basically think work is very important, maybe being on a phone is very important, watching TV might be a bit important, and going to church is kind of up there, but not necessarily vital. And then there's a whole bunch of other things associated with being a Christian that actually don't seem to feature at all. And I think we can't be that surprised if our kids aren't really that bothered, because that's what we are modeling to them. And I think we just have to work much, much harder at helping parents realize their everyday decisions will show their children. Now, I am in a very, very privileged position as a minister of the gospel, because my children see me every day reading the Bible, thinking about the Bible, talking about Jesus, meeting people because of Jesus. They see my entire life revolving around that, and because my job allows me to do that. And I appreciate that as a very privileged position. But I'm also conscious my dad was not a minister of the gospel. He had a secular job. And I saw that he saw those things were important. And we talked about those things as being important. And there was regular conversations about those things. And we read the Bible because that was important. And all of these things were clear to me, whether I agreed with them or not. They were clear to me. My parents thought they were very important and thought they really, really mattered. And I'm 100% sure my parents are the biggest reason for me becoming a Christian. And biblically, that would seem to be the pattern that we're given. Biblically, that would be seen to be the model. And yet I think we've moved away from a biblical model towards a model of saying youth work and church and Sunday schools, that's the way to draw children in and to make them believers. Well, both the Bible and church history would say, actually, it's not. That's just not the way.
Yeah, and I just think it's a helpful couple of things in there, isn't it? Say one is the Bible does seem to be very clear about the role of fathers, especially, but parents in general, of teaching their children and pointing them to the Lord. And yeah, that second thing of the, I suppose that is the Deuteronomy thing, isn't it? Of your life, it being a life thing, it matching your life, you know, it shaping your life. Mm. And of course we want to reach people who aren't in Christian families, and we want to reach non-Christian youth, youth from non-Christian families and children. But it's that much harder because very, very little around them is shaping them. And actually we'll probably do it better if we have families that are shaped by it, because they'll see it.
Mm.
So I suppose that's where I was going with the stories of I became a Christian because my Christian friend invited me. And so often I think part of that story is, and my Christian friend was just living in a different world to me.
Mm.
And that world was attractive. Not just what they told me, not just the fact that we had pizza at the youth group, but you know, here was a kid who was in a different world to me that made me think, made me, you know, challenged me and all that sort of thing, which you're not going to get if they're not living in a different world.
But what I can see we can do is trying to reach unbelieving children from unbelieving families is very, very difficult. Yeah, culturally,
and easier
biblically.
To go to parents.
Yeah, but if we can reach the parents and build up their parents, if you see a father saved in a family, and I've seen this happen a lot, see a father saved, often the wife comes later or vice versa, and then you equip those parents and they teach and train the children. Now, it doesn't always follow, doesn't always happen, but I think it's much, much less likely and much, much harder to see a child saved from that background where, even if they profess faith in the thing that you do, if their parents aren't believers and don't want to take them to church and aren't interested, you know, what hope has that child got of persevering? Now, can the Lord do it? Of course he can. But do I think, humanly speaking, that is very, very likely, and that is going to be a common way in which people are saved? Not really.
I think one of the interesting things now in the 21st century, so I think, like you say, up to the 80s and 90s, I think one of the reasons, maybe this is harsh, but creating a buzzy Sunday school youth group was possible and quite exciting. And whereas now, I'm not even sure it's possible. I mean, I'm sure it's possible. That's a stupid thing to say. But do you know what I mean? It's really like you just don't have Sunday schools in most contexts now in the same way. And so there's a way in which we're being forced to face up to the, well, how are we going to reach these generations that are missing? And actually even just going, well, we'll do it with a big Sunday school. Well, how? For that exact reason, their parents aren't going to send them anyway. So how are you going to reach this big Sunday school? How are you going to get a youth group going? And one of the risks, of course, with that is you go down the crazy things where you do a youth group that is so fun and so exciting that people come, but you actually, it's only fun and exciting because you've got to tell them about Jesus and all that kind of thing.